Just gonna jump right in. Welcome everybody. Wish everybody a Shana Tova. Hope everybody had a very meaningful and inspirational Rosh Hashanah. But for better or worse, we Jews, there's no letting up, especially this month. Just when you think you made it through and you worked on it for so long and you get settled and you plowed through your Rosh Hashanah and perhaps you got something and you don't even have time to blink, right behind it comes Yom Kippur, which obviously we need to prepare for. And if it's any, I don't know, consolation is the right word, but as soon as you get over that, you have only 4 days to get ready for Sukkot. Don't worry, the holiday doesn't end because then you have Shmini Atzeret, Simchat Torah. Basically, you tell your boss, I won't be coming in for a month. That's basically the way it goes. So, okay. So it's good now, but we have this opportunity. And while the calendar is challenging, especially in the work world where all the holidays are on weekdays and you have to work that out, it's challenging. But I like this kind of setup because Rosh Hashanah is Monday, Tuesday. Today is Wednesday. It gives us an opportunity to talk, to really, you're not just jumping right in. It's immediately Shabbos. And then before you realize it, we have a couple of days, get our Shabbos. We'll have a couple of days, get it ready for Yom Kippur. It works out, at least for me. But I think what we'll do this evening is to try to focus in on one particular ceremony that took place in the time of the temple, a very unique kind of ceremony. What took place, let me just, give me 1 second. I don't know. There's background noise. I want to just at least mute. It's probably my house. Yeah, probably. It's probably my house. But if I put myself on mute, it's not going to work. So, all right. So, right. A very unique ceremony. We're all familiar with probably the concept that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, goes into the Holy of Holies, performs a ceremony, right? We're familiar with that concept. But what I think gets overlooked, or if we know a little bit about it, we are struck by the bizarre nature of the ceremony that involves two goats. Now, we know that there's many offerings that are brought in the temple on a regular basis. Every day there were offerings on special occasions like Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of the month, or a holiday. There's always kinds of animal offerings and sacrifices, but this one is unique. It only happens once a year, and it is out there. The basic storyline is as follows. The Kohen Gadol, at one point, the high priest, has two goats, two similar goats that stand before him at the entrance to the sanctuary. Their heads, the animals' heads, are facing the Holy of Holies. And the Kohen Gadol stands and he draws lots, a lottery. There's one box that has two, for lack of a better term, pieces of paper, but they weren't paper. They were ultimately made on little gold tablets, not the iPad kind, the old-fashioned kinds. And one of them said the Hebrew word Lahashem, for God, and the other one in Hebrew said La'azazel, to Azazel. That's it. These are the two words that are one on one piece, one on the other. He can't see. The box only held enough room for his hands and those two things. And he would put both his hands into that box and draw the two lots. The one on his right would go for the right goat, and the one on the left would go for the left goat. One was determined to be brought as an offering to Hashem in the sanctuary, in the temple. And the other, the one that came up for La'azazel, was sent, and we'll talk a little bit more about it, but it was sent out of the temple. It was sent out of the temple for a long distance way out. I'll pause the story there. We'll get to what the conclusion is for each of them in a moment. But what happens is so strange. Listen to some of the laws that are required about these two goats. First of all, they have to be of the same value. You cannot have one goat that's worth $500 and one goat that's only worth $250. Nope. They have to be of similar value, both around, for argument's sake, $500. They also have to be of the same size. You can't get one that's the husky size like Sharon's dog, and the other is just this little chihuahua. It's not going to work. It has to be identical, the same in appearance, in size, in worth. They have to be acquired at the same time. You can't buy one on Monday and then a week later buy the other one. It sounds weird, doesn't it? It sounds really strange. But wait, the two lots in the box also have to be identical. They have to be the same size and made of, the same material. Okay, and the high priest puts his hand in and he pulls it out and voila, this one goes this way, this one goes that way, and we move on in our ceremony. Very, very strange. So you with me so far? Is this new to people, or we have some, you've heard some of this before? No? Okay. So if I gloss over something, please interject and ask, because I've said this enough times, I forget what people know and what they don't. So I apologize. You have these two goats, okay? One of them is brought, as I said, as an offering on the altar. Let's just walk through for the moment. Let's pretend that we are the Kohen Gadol, we're the high priest, and we're going to walk step by step through this, okay? Let's just, for argument's sake, my right hand comes up with the one that says, this is the animal that will be brought as an offering. So what happens? Well, the animal is immediately whisked away, is brought to a certain part of the temple where they did the slaughtering. They actually shechted the animal, and they collected its blood, and it was used in a ceremony on the altar and in the Holy of Holies, and a whole process of how some of it is burned on the altar. There's a whole process. Now, imagine you are the other goat. Sid, you're watching this. You're watching this guy. For all you know, they were friends back in the pen. They were friends and they knew each other and they were bought at the same time and they're all excited and they're like, woo, the two of us. It's like, you know, the teacher calling on two kids like, yes, it's us. And he goes ahead and he's watching the ceremony. He doesn't know what to make of it. And the Kohen Gadol pulls it out and he watches his friend. And all of a sudden he's watching his friend being taken and slaughtered. And he's like, woo. Man, I am glad I didn't end up with Richard's portion here. I'm so glad, man, I'm still standing. And he starts playing the music, right? And like, what? The animal is brought, and as far as the other animal knows, as far as the remaining animals, he's dead, he's done. He's like, okay, what's going to happen to me? Well, the next thing you know, there's a man who comes and leads this other goat outside the temple. And he starts walking outside and he's looking over his shoulder. I can just imagine Sid doing this, looking over his shoulder and saying, woo, thank God. Oh man, glad it wasn't me. I'm out of here. And he's walking and they're going. And he's like, whoa, the further away from that slaughterhouse, the better for me. And he's gone, he's going. Until he gets to this long, a cliff, beautiful, overlooking out into the desert. And he's looking and the man, and it's like, oh, as if he were to say, Baruch Hashem. And what happens? The Torah tells us a strange thing. The man who led this animal, this goat, out of the temple, pushes the goat over the cliff. I know it sounds bizarre. Throws him over the cliff, and it's a very, obviously, it's It's got rocks and sharp whatever. And by the time it lands, it's gone. It's also dead. And the Torah says, and that is part of the atonement on Yom Kippur. Now, for those of you who are new to this, I don't blame you. The eyebrows are way up into the forehead, and you are like, really? This is the same Torah that's talking to me about ethics and values and how I'm supposed to be a giving person and all these wonderful and you're telling me I'm throwing a goat over the cliff? And this is part of my atonement? I thought fasting on Yom Kippur was hard. What am I supposed to make of all of this? This is the topic for tonight, folks. Yes, Susan. Sure. Pile it on. Go ahead.
I'm just saying that there was no PETA organization then.
Yeah, PETA was not around. That's correct. There was no PETA back then.
Oh, my word. That's all. I'm just noting that, okay?
Fair enough. Okay. But I think I've earned enough rapport with all of you that I wouldn't go ahead and just trash the Torah just willy-nilly. There must be some kind of at least plausible explanation, or let me say it better. If I'm not able to present a plausible explanation, at least can I walk away with a lesson the Torah is trying to teach me? That much I think we can agree. So let's see what we can figure out here. I think the easiest way to start was with a basic premise. One of the most fundamental principles in Judaism, and I mean really fundamental principles, is that human beings are given choice. We have free will to make choices. We'll talk a little bit more in depth about this, but it's a very important premise. There's no concept of it's purely random. It just happened to me. There's no such concept. There are choices to be made. I'll give you, here. The entire premise of a Torah, that if you follow the commandments, it's good, and if you don't follow, it's not good, is built on that presumption that there are consequences to our actions. I have a choice. If it was determined already ahead of time, predetermined, right? There are those that believe in determinism of where it's, hey, you can't hold me accountable. That's just what Judaism doesn't buy that. Judaism believes that we have choices to make. We choose the path in our life. I love to use the example when I was a child. They had those choose your own ending books. I loved it. You can read the same book 6 or 7 times and come up with a different conclusion each time. It was great. I told my teacher I read 7 books over the weekend. She was so impressed. You know, it was the same book, but I came up with 7 different endings. Okay, so it's a different book. There has to be an ability. If God is going to hold me accountable for something, for reward or punishment, then it has to be I made a choice. The whole concept of blessings, the whole concept of reward or punishment is built on this. It's important to understand how critical and fundamental this idea is. Rabbi Akiva. We know the great Rabbi Akiva, one of the greatest leaders of the Jewish people. He was very accustomed to say, it was one of his favorite teachings. He said, how beloved is humankind, how beloved is man, because he was created in the image of God, right? We're told in the very beginning of the Torah, the very beginning, that when God created man, he created it in God's image. There's a certain level of godliness within us that we are invested with. But Rabbi Akiva continued, and he said, it's indicative of an even greater love for mankind, that it was made known to him that he was created in the image of God. We're told that we have that godliness. Imagine for a moment that you go ahead and you played the lottery. You played you know, there was a big jackpot. I wish, you know, the one that was a little over $1 billion. The fact that you're all on the Zoom means none of you got it. So, all right, fine. We can still be friends. Right? But you go ahead and you play it. And you're holding the winning ticket. But you never bothered to check what the winning numbers were. So you have the winning ticket. You're holding the golden ticket that's worth $1 billion. But you don't even know you have it. You forgot about it. You put it in your underwear drawer. You put it in your sock drawer. And it's there until, you know, probably sometime before Pesach and you're cleaning for Pesach. And you're like, oh, whatever happened with that drawing? You don't even, says Rabbi Akiva, not only did God actually give us a winning ticket, he informed us we have the winning ticket. Think about it. Rabbi Akiva could have chosen 10, 50, 100 different things of what God gave us. But he said, this concept that we were created in God's image is the most, is the greatest manifestation of how God shows his love for us. And he told us. Now, what is this image of God? Does God look more like me or more like you? Heaven forbid it's either, right? The answer is very simple. It doesn't mean in physical terms because God does not have physical attributes. When it says that we're created in God's image, it means with a sense of godliness. Well, what's the greatest expression of godliness that God created? God made a decision. God chose to create a universe. Right? That is an expression of godliness. So God invested that within us and said, you're holding the most critical key of what it means to be created in the image of God. Free will, the ability to choose. Now, I know Susan for many, many years, and Susan is thinking, well, Rabbi, that's true. God gave us free will. He gave us choice. But don't you have to have choices to choose from? Having one choice and only one choice is not an expression of free will. There's only one option. So what choices do we have? What are the classic two choices that we always have to choose from?
Good and evil.
Good and evil. In fact, the very first story in the Torah of mankind's test with Adam and Eve was in the Garden of Eden. Would he follow the command, do good, or would he go against it? Good versus evil. This is the fundamental concept. Free will involves choice. Two choices. The fellow who's incarcerated in prison may have free will, but he has no choices. He's only given one option for lunch. If he doesn't like it, he can't go to 7 Mile Market and buy himself something different. No choice. But we are given this fine. So we have the free will and we have this ability. How many times in our life, though, do we recognize that the choices we're making can have global consequences? We very often will underestimate the power of our choices. We say, all right, what's the big deal? It's not a big deal. It's only a small little mitzvah. Or it's only one little piece of lashon hara, one little piece of gossip, whatever. She's never going to find out anyway, which is mistake number one. They almost always find out.
They?
Yeah, they always find out. You know, in the Jewish world especially, we really have to be careful because I would say the majority of the times you're speaking lashon hara about someone, you're either talking to a friend or a relative of that person. So be really, really careful because that's the way it works. But we very often underestimate the power of that choice. Let's go back to our story for a moment. We have a day where we stand before our God and we're asking forgiveness. What is it that we're asking forgiveness for? For sins and mistakes that we've made over the year, right? Isn't that the basis of Yom Kippur, a day of atonement? I'm asking forgiveness. Hello, Doesn't that presume that you recognize that you had a choice and therefore you're asking forgiveness for it? If I was forced to do it or it's out of my control, what am I asking forgiveness for? It was predetermined. What do you want from me? I don't know what you want from me. I was meant to be a murderer. That's the way it is. You can't have any complaints against me. The fact that we have a day of atonement of where I'm asking forgiveness presumes that I did something I chose. Right? If I made no choice, right, and was totally forced, right? I don't know, take an example. If someone comes up to me and they force me to eat on Yom Kippur, they force me to eat non-kosher on Yom Kippur, held a gun to my head. Robin holds a gun to, not you. If somebody, you're an attorney, that's what I'm choosing, right? If someone comes up to me, puts a gun to my head and he's serious, he's gonna kill me. If I don't eat pork on Yom Kippur itself, should I or should I not eat that?
Should eat it.
What do you say, Robin? It's Yom Kippur.
Eat it.
It's pork.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm not saying this right. The commandment that says that you always should choose life would go over following Yom Kippur, so you should eat it.
I should eat it. Killed.
Yes, because you're choosing life.
Does everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Margie doesn't agree with that. She shook her head. I saw that. What? You're on mute. What is it?
I'm on the fence.
You're on the fence? That's such a politically correct answer.
That's why? Would you?
It's politically correct. Come on, pick a side. Eat it or don't eat it.
Eat it.
The answer is unequivocally 100% eat it. 100%. You say, but Rabbi, this is Yom Kippur. Yeah, but my life does come first. There are three exceptions. There are three exceptions. Just I'll make a little note of it. If somebody puts a gun to my head and says, I'll kill you if you don't kill him, you do not kill the other person and you are willing to give up your life. Do not kill someone else to save your skin. That's a no-no. Similarly, to commit adultery, bona fide adultery, a married man, married woman says live with another married woman. Oh no, don't do it. You have to be willing to give up your life. And the third would be idolatry. Those are your three big exceptions. Those are the three cardinal sins in Judaism. Everything else, Yom Kippur that falls out, Margie, I'll make it harder. It's Yom Kippur that falls out on Shabbos. And I'm going to eat the pork. The answer is yes. I still do it. 100%. Okay. Why am I telling you this? Right. The concept that I was going to ask Robin, because let me ask you, if I was forced to do it and now I stand before you, you're a judge, you've been elevated. Okay.
Good.
Your honor. I had no choice. They were going to kill me if I didn't eat the pork on Yom Kippur, which was Shabbos. Are you going to hold me liable or not? What do you say, Your Honor?
You would still be responsible because you still broke a law or a commandment.
Really? Well, thank God you're not God. No, the answer is if the whole, again, Robin, if you're telling me that I'm supposed to eat it, that okay. means the Torah says, God says that is the right okay. choice to make.
Okay.
So why should I be liable? Okay. I'm being forced to do something. If I'm forced to do it, you can't hold me liable. So if it's predetermined that I was going to be an axe murderer, then what do you want against? What do you? There's nothing to ask forgiveness for. It was predetermined. The concept of Yom Kippur is predicated on I have a choice and I chose it. I chose to speak that juicy gossip. I chose to do something good. I have free will and I have choices to make and I choose it. Now, let's go to our two goats here for a second. I told you that the law demands that they be pretty much identical in size, in worth, in appearance, acquired at the same time. They're literally side by side identical. And you don't know at any moment which one is going in which direction. Is the right hand going to pull up the one that's brought as an offering? Or is the left hand going to be the one? You don't know. You have no idea. Remember, it's a lottery. The Kohen Gadol cannot see them. Two identical goats with two diametrically opposed conclusions. Two very different endings. Yes, they both end up dying. But look at how one dies and how the other dies. One dies in an actual offering, in a ceremony being brought before God in the Holy of Holies. And one thinks it got away from that. And all of a sudden, before it knows, it's over the precipice and life is done. For what? With what purpose? It thought it was going to live the good life. It's getting away from sacrifice. It's getting away from, oh my God, all these restrictions and how they deal with it. Thank God, I'm out of here. And he goes and he goes and he thinks he's living the good life. And then before he knows it, he's done. For what? This is an important idea. We have one, you know, it's a moment of choice that the Kohen Gadol makes. Now we'll talk about what seems to be the randomness of it. We'll get to that. But one of them is marked, one of those gold tablets is marked for God. It's an offering where the blood, I said, is gathered in a holy vessel, brought into the Holy of Holies. It's symbolic of a role of sacrifice for God, willing to die for a cause, to die for a holy reason. The other one remains alive, intact, in fullness of life. Ah, the man who's leading it away from the sanctuary, free, alive, erect, and then suddenly topples backwards and dies. These are the two paths that we face on a regular basis in our life. Choices that we make. One begins with a level of self-sacrifice. There is not a person on this call who doesn't understand that concept. You all have sacrificed in your life for things that are meaningful to you. You've all done it. None of you have taken just sit back, take it easy, let life roll along. No, you've all committed yourself to a synagogue, to a program, to your children. You've sacrificed a ton because you understand that that's what life really has meaning for. Life, for me to choose a harder life, maybe that's not the right word, a more challenging life that requires real dedication, devotion, sacrifice, both physically, emotionally, financially. It takes a toll. But when you're done, you look back and you say, I did it for a cause. I did it for something worthwhile. One path begins like this, with a self-sacrifice, willing to submit yourself to a higher calling. It seems on the surface to be a quick loss of self, like that happened to that goat, a quick loss of self. But you understand that it was an entry point into a much higher, a much more genuine form of existence, a higher calling. I spoke at my mother-in-law's funeral. She had a smile. She always had a smile on her face. Just a very wonderful, warm lady. She will be sorely missed. But I took the opportunity and I used the word smile, and I told everybody that it stood for an acronym. It stood for five words. Service makes individual lives extraordinary. She lived to help others. Mm. And that's why she always smiled. If you think about it, that level of contentment after you've worked hard, you did sacrifice, but it was for something meaningful. There's a certain, you feel good. It was hard. Yes, it took a lot of effort, blood, sweat, and tears, no question about it. But there's a level of satisfaction, and that you smile about. You look back and you say, this was worthwhile. I spent 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, 100 years doing something worthwhile with my life. That's meaningful. There's what to smile about. If you ever want to write that down, service makes individual lives extraordinary. That's what it is. So that's one path. That's the path of the goat that's chosen to be brought on the altar. Yeah, it was a swift an end. It was giving up of itself, but to a higher calling. The other one is an apparent preservation of independence. It's rejecting the notion of sacrifice. It seems to be going on the path towards more and greater life, away from sacrifice, away from death. But the ultimate is that it ends quickly and you look back and you say, for what? Each of us has that same opportunity every day to choose which path. The ceremony that takes place on Yom Kippur between these two goats, I hate to say it, but it's us. We get to choose. We get to choose. Remember, the options were exactly the same. They were the same. It wasn't one predisposed more than another. They were the same. Same value, same size, same appearance, same time. There were no apparent noticeable differences. Now, the question you're going to ask is, but the goat didn't choose. I knew it. I knew you were thinking that. You're right, Muriel. The goat did not choose because it's an animal. Animals don't have free will. But let's add to your question. If you want to tell me that the ceremony should have gone, that the Kohen Gadol stands there and he, with his own volition, his own choice, says, I choose this one to be the altar one and this one to go out to Hazah, I can begin to hear that even better. But here, this is the most random. Putting your hand in a box and choosing, quote unquote, a lottery. Which one goes in the right? Which one goes in the left? You have no idea. It's random. Rabbi T, come on. You're killing your whole drasha here. Your whole lecture is out the window. It's not choosing. This is all random. You like that question, Muriel? It's a good question. But I think if you give it a little bit more thought, you can understand. That's exactly the point. It is not random. Oh, maybe for the Kohen Gadol, he had no idea. But God knew. And God chose, this is my call. There is no random. What you think is the most classic example of randomness, I've orchestrated it all. I've orchestrated it. God does play that role. There are things we have in our life that we don't get to choose. It's like a game of cards. How many of you actually get the chance to pick your hand? None of you. You're dealt your hand. That's your hand. Your job is to play the cards. Play the hand to the best of your ability, but you don't get to choose your hand. Man does not choose the hand he is given by God. That is true. I did not choose my parents. It's a good thing. Right? I didn't choose certain aspects of medical condition. I didn't choose whether I'm going to be a redhead or a brown. I don't get to choose. Okay, I know genetics played a role there. Fine. But there are things that you don't get to choose. That's true. And your job is to play the hand you're dealt to the best of your ability. And that's where your choices come in. You get to choose how you play the hand. That's your choice. Nobody, no external force, no external stimuli, nothing can go ahead and make the choice for you. You make the choice. Now, let's be honest. The more times you choose a certain path, the more it becomes a habit for you and it becomes second nature, for good and for bad. There are certain habits that hopefully we inculcated since we're young or when we got a little bit older that have become second nature, which is a great thing. But we made those choices. It comes more easily now, more natural, but I'm choosing, right? For me, I'll use myself as an example, okay? I grew up in a home where we kept kosher. I grew up in a home where we kept Shabbos in a very, you know, in a very observant way. So yeah, ultimately, when I was a teenager and when I got married, I made my choice to continue doing that. Nobody forced that on me. That was my choice. I mean, Mrs. T had a big play, you know, big role in it, but I made the choice, right? I made that choice. Was it easier for me to make that choice because I grew up with it? 100%. 100%. But that was my choice, as it was my wife's, as it will be with my children. They all have a choice. I'm hopeful that we've shown them the beauty of living this life, that they'll choose it, but ultimately it's their choice. No parent can force their child to do yes, to do anything. Ultimately, it's the child's choice. This is the power we are given. All of it is based on a premise that we have the free will to choose. Okay? You cannot blame external circumstances. Remember, the lotteries were identical. One was not predisposed, predetermined before another. Those choices are all ours. But I want to do two more points to this. Number one is, how exactly do I exercise that free will? So we may have talked about this at some point, but if we have, forgive me, it's right before Yom Kippur. Okay. The concept, if let's say, Lauren, you like vanilla or chocolate? You have a choice of ice cream. I'm going to give you one. Vanilla? Okay, you're a vanilla. Okay. Did you just exercise your free will in choosing vanilla over chocolate?
Yes.
You sure? I can't convince you to take the chocolate.
No.
How about if I throw in sprinkles? okay, maybe. I see you hesitating. How about with a maraschino cherry on top and hot fudge syrup? Okay, so you can see it's not so simple, right? You're making a free will choice. The truth of the matter is, Lauren, you did not. Even if you were to stick to your guns and stick with your vanilla, you are not really exercising your free will. Why do I say that? You chose. So here's why I say that.
Just gave her two choices.
There's always two choices. You have vanilla and chocolate. Those are two choices.
But she could choose not to have any.
That's not an option. We're talking about ice cream here, Michelle. That's come on, be real. You're not exercising your free will, and I'll tell you why. I started by telling you that free will, Rabbi Akiva said, is the greatest gift that God gave to mankind. That means it's unique to mankind. Do animals have preferences? Do they prefer one dog food or a cat food over another?
Yes.
Absolutely do. Absolutely. Are they exercising free will when they choose Purina over Puppy Chow? That's not free will. It's an instinct. That's what they like. It's a taste. It's a flavor. But you're not exercising free will when it comes to that kind of choice. The real choice is where you're exercising free will is in the realm, as we started, of good versus evil, where there's a moral dilemma. It has to have a moral consequence. Choosing vanilla over chocolate, I know some of you think that that is a moral decision. I know, it's a big decision. However, let's be real and let's keep it, you know, it's an important idea, and I'm with you, Lauren. I would choose vanilla 99 out of 100 times over chocolate. However, I'm not exercising my free will. The same way Adam and Eve, when they were put in the Garden of Eden and they were given a choice to eat from the tree, not eat from the tree, it's not about the eating. That's not the point. The point is, are they going to follow the command and do good what God asked them to do? Or are they going to reject it and do against what God asked? That's what it boils down to, a good versus evil. There, that's when we're really exercising free will. Life or the good is moral decisions that are making us move in the direction towards more godliness. The negative choice is where I'm moving further away from that godliness. That's your life versus death. Moral decisions that move me towards God or an effort to grow and improve myself, that's a positive choice. That's good. Evil is where I make a moral decision. That doesn't mean there's no goodness that comes out of it. If I choose that to do something evil, I steal something, right? That's evil. That's going against a moral command about being ethical. But I got a benefit. I stole the money and I bought myself not one, but two vanilla ice creams. There was good that came out of it. But that choice is still moving me in the direction away from godliness because I broke the command and I become less ethical because I stole. Things that move me towards God are good. Things that make it escape from the effort and escape away from God, that's a bomb. But here's what's cool. I don't know how many of us are on the call, whatever it is. It's 10, 15, whatever it is. Not one of us is making the exact same free will choice at any given moment. Let me say that again. My free will moment, let's take me, okay? Talk about myself one time a year, till next year, okay? I'm at a certain point in my observance with my connection to Judaism, my connection to God. Okay. For me to go ahead and to eat non-kosher, yes, I make the choice. I'm not going to do it. But let's be honest, it's not a difficult choice for me. I've been doing it my whole life. Doesn't mean I'm not going to get credit for it, but I'm not really exercising that moral dilemma between good and evil. For the most part, I've already passed that. I'm on to more difficult or other challenges, right? For me, not speaking Lashon Hara when I get off the call here, and for my wife to tell her how everybody, you know, 2/3 of you fell asleep, 3 of you, you know, just like say some serious Lashon Hara. That's a challenge for me. However, for some of you, eating non-kosher is a bigger challenge. And each one of us is at a different point in our life and at a different point in our Judaism that, by the way, what holds true today will be different tomorrow because you made a choice today to do something. You made a choice to give up your 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. You could be watching on CBS, you know, whatever's on. I have no idea.
Amazing Race.
Amazing Race. You gave it up. You made a moral choice, Robin. You think that coming to Rabbi T's class is a decision that is going to improve your life and it's going to help you grow and improve and go towards more godliness, right? Haha, right? That's what it did. So you made a moral choice that you chose Tachman over the Amazing Race. Now, you have an option because the truth is both are being recorded and you can get either one later. So I appreciate you took the time. But you know what I'm saying? Like, but for someone else who doesn't normally come, this would be hard. They're a big Amazing Race fan. This is like the highlight of their week. That's a harder choice. I'll give you the perfect analogy. It's not mine. Rabbi Dessler, Rabbi Elio Dessler gave this example. of a battlefront. I know that war nowadays is fought a little bit differently, but the concept still holds true. You have two armies, right? And they're fighting a battle. And the real battle takes place at the battlefront. Now, what happens if Army A pushes Army B back a mile? Right? Where is the war being fought now? It's still at the battlefront, but the battlefront point has moved. What was the battlefront is now conquered territory for Army A. There's no fighting going on where the old battlefront was. They conquered it. And it keeps moving. Then Army B pushes Army A back. And it's a seesaw, yin-yang, back and forth, right? The goal ultimately of the war is that one army pushes far enough that the other doesn't have anymore, and you've conquered it all. This is the analogy Rabbi Dessler uses about the free will choices that we make in our life. When I was a teenager, the challenge for me to keep Shabbos or to keep kosher was a bit more challenging. It was a battlefront battle challenge. But when I made the decision, I conquered that territory. It became part of my life, been doing it ever since. The battlefront has shifted. I'm not fighting the battle of keeping kosher or not. That's not a battle for me right now. The same is true for each one of us. For each one of us, we are at a certain point today in our battle. Where are my values? Where am I? What? You know, I venture to say that 3 weeks ago, we were at a certain point. But now, having gone through Rosh Hashanah, hopefully it was meaningful, got a little inspiration to try to be a little bit better this year. Hey, your free will point just moved. You were convinced. You're like, I don't know. I did Tachman already for a few years. I don't know. Another year? I don't know. All right, fine. Rosh Hashanah told me I should do it. Fine. Okay. So that free will point has shifted. Now you're stuck. That's it. Now you're stuck with me for the year. Okay. But now you're on to the next battle. And this is what's constantly changing. But recognize at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, you have to exercise that free will choice. It's your call. Nobody else's. That's your call. Let me take it one step further. And this was new for me. I found it and I loved it. You know, the concept that both of these goats, for all intents and purposes, could have been twins because they have pretty much the same qualities, the same characteristics. That's the requirement. You know, there's a certain idea of twins that are opposites is a very familiar theme in the Torah. Can you think of the classic twins that represented two opposites of good and evil, perhaps? How about Jacob and Esau?
Yeah.
Yaakov and Esav. They're twins, and they go in very different directions. And you would say, oh, right? You would never confuse them. They have nothing in no similarities whatsoever. One was born hairy, one was, you know, smooth skin. One sat and was in academics, and one was out hunting in the field. And one of them committed all the atrocities, and one of them just wanted to learn Torah. And you would never put the two together, would you? No. However, you're missing one piece of information. And that is Yaakov and Esav were similar in their actions, their behaviors, up until bar mitzvah, till they were 13. At 13, Esav and Yaakov made their decisions while at that moment it was a slight deviation. Esav didn't wake up the day after his bar mitzvah and say, take his kippah, woo, and threw it away and said, I'm done with this, thanks. That's not what happened. The day after his bar mitzvah, he decided, I went to shul yesterday. I don't need to go today. That's not meant as a personal ribbing on anybody. I'm using that as an example. It was a subtle little thing. All right. He didn't want to get up. I didn't daven today, or I didn't go to shul, or it was a small thing. But you all know, take two pieces of wood, take two rulers, and just put one of them at an eighth of an inch slope. When they are side by side, you can hardly tell the difference. But go a foot, go 2 feet, go 5 feet, go 10 feet, go up, you can see how the trajectories end up miles apart. This is how Yaakov and Esav started as well. Similar to the goats. They started pretty much identical. But when the choice was to follow a path of sacrifice and dedication to a higher purpose, and the other was more interested in heading out away. Rabbi Huttner notes this parallel between the goats and Yaakov and Esav, and he suggested, and I love his words, he says that when things look alike from the exterior, it is a sign that one must look within at the essence in order to discern the difference. Don't get fooled by the gold and the glitter and all that shines. Right? If you ever bought a car, did you fall in love with it because the exterior? Probably. But if you were a smart car buyer, you'd lift up the hood and you'd see what kind of engine is it. You do have to see. Let's see the guts of the thing. That's the real truth. The idea of the two goats is intrinsically related to the personalities of Yaakov and Esav. Identical on the outside, but boy, was there difference on the essence on the inside. The reason we need to offer that second goat that's thrown out to Azazel is that so often we find ourselves dressing up like Esav instead of behaving like Yaakov that we really are. That's the message that's being said to us. It's not just a nice, interesting connection. There actually is a midrash that makes this point. How many of you know and remember the story of when Yaakov is persuaded by his mother, Rivka, to go ahead and to bring the offering, right? To bring something to their father, Isaac, right? Mm-hmm. What did he bring him?
He brought him
soup.
Soup.
No, wrong story.
No.
Sorry.
Long story. That's when Esav comes in. They were young at the time. Yeah. And he came in and he says, I'm hungry. Pour in some of that red lentil soup. Yeah. Now, this is where Rivka prepared a meal for Isaac. And he had Yaakov come in and wear the clothing of Esav. Yitzchak was blind. And he said, the voice sounds like Yaakov, but the skin feels like, right? What did Rivka prepare for Yaakov?
Two goats.
Thank you, Monroe. People who think I make this stuff up. I'm telling you, read the Torah. It says, Rebecca Rivka tells Yaakov, go now to the herd and bring me two good goats. Says the Medrash, who cares? Who cares what it was? I just say prepare a delicacy the way we need to know that it was a goat and we need to know two of them, says the Medrash, because this is foreshadowing of the ultimate difference in the two goats of the Yom Kippur service. One that's like Yaakov that becomes dedicated and devoted to a higher calling. And one is like Esav that's more interested in free, independent, fun-filled life without any meaning or purpose. What time is it? Okay. One last thought. The same idea. What is this word Azazel? So Sharon knows a little modern Hebrew, so she gives me this funny look. I recommend, by the way, do not walk up to an Israeli and tell him or her Lech la'Azazel, which means go to Azazel. That's the Israeli version of go to hell. So don't do that. But Azazel is that mountain, that cliff that the goat is thrown off of. That's the area. That's the region. However, our sages pick up and say, Why do I need to know again the name of it? What's the difference? Just say it goes out into a cliff and it's thrown overboard. So the great Hasidic master, the Sfas Emes, writes that Azazel is an acronym that is made up of the words Ze Leumas Ze Asa Elokim. God has made one corresponding to the other. Everything in our world is a yin yang. There's an action and an opposite reaction. There's always a balance with two viable choices. The word Azazel, he understands, is the reference to the fact that there are choices. This or this, God made. You have two choices to make. Every single time a Yom Kippur comes around and we are faced with a very strange ceremony involving goats, one with a conclusion that's being brought on the altar as a sacrifice and offering, and one that's thrown over a cliff. Yeah, I don't have all the answers exactly why the way it's played out, it does. I don't have all that. But I do understand that the Torah is trying to impress upon us this exact lesson. We are those goats, and we have two choices to make on a regular basis. And the choices we make have consequences what direction in life we go. This is the message of the two goats. I titled the class A Tale of Two Goats. Now you understand. Two so different. The endings are drastically different because of choice, choices that we make. I'll end with a story and then I'll open up to questions. An elderly carpenter was ready to retire. He told his employer contractor of his plans to leave the house building business and living more leisurely life with his wife, enjoying his extended family. He would miss the paycheck, but he needed to retire. They would manage to get by. The contractor was sorry to see his good worker go and asked if he could build just one more house as a personal favor. The carpenter said yes, but in time, it was easy to see that his heart was not in his work. He resorted to shoddy workmanship and used inferior materials. It was an unfortunate way to end a very dedicated career. When the carpenter finished his work, the employer came to inspect the house. He handed the front door key to the carpenter and said, "This is your house. It's my gift to you." The carpenter was shocked. What a shame. If he had only known he was building his own house, he would have done it all so differently. So it is with us. We build our lives one day at a time, often putting less than our best into the building. Then with a shock, we realize we have to live in the house that we've built. If we could do it over again, we would do it much differently, but we cannot go back. I am the carpenter. Each day, we hammer a nail, place a board, erect a wall. Life really is a do-it-yourself project. Your attitude and the choices you make today build the house that you live in tomorrow. Make sure you build wisely. Isn't that a great story?
Sure.
Great story. One of my favorites. All right. What you got?
I'm probably just really confused. But there is, isn't there a separate goat where the priest, where we, all the sins are placed on that goat and that goat is sent off? That's not these two goats. That's a totally separate goat, correct?
No, that's the second goat.
Oh, that is the second goat. Okay. Cause you didn't, yeah, you didn't say that. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I thought maybe, but you didn't mention that.
Yes, you're right. I did. I should have mentioned that. Correct.
That makes a little bit of a.
Yes. The sins, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, confesses on that animal, and then it's sent out. That's right. I forgot to say that. My bad.
Okay. But that's a scapegoat.
That's the scapegoat. Yes, that's exactly right.
But that makes it even more compelling, I think, knowing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing it. I apologize. Thank you for bringing that up. Sharon.
I was just saying, what happened or who was it that
was in charge of throwing the goat over the cliff. What was his merit? I mean, did he get points for throwing it over?
Great question. That's a great question. The truth of the matter is, the Talmud, it's interesting. The Torah uses a very strange expression when it says that the one who's chosen to do that. Ish et is the word. Ish et, the man whose time it is. Very unclear. Man of time. The Talmud actually says that the person was chosen. I don't know if it's so much a merit or a reality that it's somebody who will not make it through the year. Wow. I don't know exactly how the person was chosen, but that person was limited. Let me see. Hold on. Let me find the exact expression. Hold on.
They do this every year?
Every year. Somebody else. Hold on.
No. Population control.
It's only one person. It's not that big of a population control. One person. Here it is. Here it is.
One has to read it. Then he has to turn it.
Ishi Hamidbar. Here it is. The verse says, and send it with a designated man to the desert, to the desert. Let's see if Rashi here. A designated man, Rashi quotes the Talmud, the man who would lead the he-goat to the desert was appointed the day before Yom Kippur. It was just designated the day before. But I'm pretty sure the Talmud describes this man. I have to look it up. I don't remember. It's been a while. I have to look it up as to what the qualifications and the... for that person to get that job. I have to get back to you on that. Any other questions?
A technical question. As far as the two goats, you said that they had to be identical. Well, when you have goats that are born from the same doe, as far as that goes, could those two animals have been like twins related?
I had that same question. I didn't find anything that said yay or nay. The only impression that I got is that that's not a requirement that they be actually twins or related. They just have to, because that's a tough order to get every single year to look for that. Can't always guarantee that somebody's herd had twins, you know? But as long as it met the basic qualifications of looking, you know, worth it, that they were for all intents and purposes identical, not if they were actually identical. This is an important lesson, folks. It really is about making good choices. That's what this message is all about. And again, I'll end with this. That's what all of Yom Kippur is based on. That I stand before God and I'm asking forgiveness because I made a choice. I wasn't forced. Wasn't somebody else. I made that choice and I'm willing to own up to it. That's why I'm going to be better for next year, because I recognize it was my choice. You see, people who don't do Yom Kippur, they'll never get the message. They'll never understand this because, you can't hold me responsible. We live in a society where people don't take responsibility for their actions. Yom Kippur is the reminder you do have to take responsibility. You don't like it? Okay, that's life. That's what it means to be alive. Take responsibility. Don't blame everyone and everything. Yes, Muriel.
Well, the designated man did not make a choice. He was designated. So were there any consequences to his action?
Not that I know of. It's not a negative.
Have to do it. Did he not have to do it?
I guess he could have declined. He could have.
So he chose to murder this poor goat.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the goat.
Yeah. Did you, what did you have for dinner tonight?
What did I have for dinner? I had lamb.
I rest my case.
No goat.
I rest my case. How all of a sudden you don't feel so bad, huh? Next.
Rabbi, I know
Your Robin Honor, case closed. What, Sharon?
I know Robin can relate because we both heard the same sermon, but one of the things that the rabbi was talking about was sacrificing and how everybody cringes when we think about animal sacrifices and everything else. And he said, isn't it more humane to look the goat or the ram in the eye and the way that he's being sacrificed for a higher thing, opposed to the way the slaughterhouses are? He said, if everybody's repulsed with it, then we should all be vegetarians. Okay, I'm for that. But that's the thing. It's like we're all repulsed when we hear about sacrificing animals, but we don't think twice about what they're doing in the slaughterhouse.
See, it's a good point. It's a good point. I think, and again, I know that certain people, in terms of vegetarians, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that per se. But it gets back to this point. If at the end of the day, from a Torah perspective, human beings are at the top of the totem pole. We are. I'm not saying anything against animals, but they're not on the same level as human beings. We go ahead, the Torah does allow and say, you can go ahead and do, I don't know, medical experimentation using lab rats, because it will ultimately be beneficial for mankind. I want to be careful. I don't mean to suggest that we have the right to abuse. Use, not abuse. There's a world of difference. It is perfectly fine because they are serving the higher purpose, and that is for mankind. Cats are people too is not something that the Torah ascribes to. It's not true. Cats are wonderful creatures, and we have great lessons that we can learn, and we should treat them with the best care possible if they're our pet. I'm on board with all of that. But I also feel, again, the Torah is telling me, I have the right to eat lamb. I have the right to eat chicken. I have the right to eat a cow. That is what the Torah allows. So that means that the animal is there to serve mankind. The same way that the flowers and everything else in the world is there, we can use, not abuse, we can use it, no problem. So I don't have an issue with the fact that you had lamb for dinner tonight. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But I think Sharon's point is very well taken, and that is if we can have somewhat of a paradigm shift and not look at it as, ew, gross, I can't believe you went ahead and you sacrificed this thing. It's serving a purpose. What is that purpose? For mankind. This is part of mankind's relationship and part of the ceremony that God said is beneficial for our relationship between you and me. Now you can ask, why is that God's choice? That's a fair question, and we can talk about what the rationale might be. But that is what it says. So an animal that quote unquote gives up its life in the service of the temple and an offering, that reaches for the animal its greatest potential, instead of some shmegegi who decides just to go hunting and kill an animal for what purpose? He's not even going to eat it. This is a much higher calling. That's a very valid point. What they do in the slaughterhouses, no, that's another whole debate. But I think that's a great point, that there is a sense of utilizing the world that God has given us for higher purpose. I'll put it to you this way. There is nothing in our world that cannot be used in the service of God. Nothing. Every material can be used. From minerals like salt, we put salt on our challah, to flowers and grasses that were used for different spices that were used, to animals, everything. There's nothing. Yeah. The hide of an animal is used for leather. You know what it's used for? To make the parchment for a Torah. There's nothing in our world, because otherwise it wouldn't be here. As long as you have that mentality to say, how can this be used in a higher purpose, a higher calling, you're on the right track. Yes, Robin.
But going along with that, the first goat was elevated, but the second goat, didn't the second goat, because the priest, the, you know, the sins of the people were put on that goat, wasn't that also a purpose? That goat served a purpose?
Yes, it serves a purpose, but not nearly the same, because it's, again, the symbolism of it. The symbolism is that it's moving away from that higher calling. It wants to get away from it. It leaves the temple. It takes, you know, what are the sins? What are the sins that we do? I don't want to know specifics. That's, you know, that's between you and God. But sins are things that are going against what we're not supposed to do, or things that we fell short of what our responsibilities are to do, right? So imagine, take the whole kit and caboodle, everybody's wrongdoings, lump it on this goat. It'd be like, yes, this is like pure independence. This is like, give me all the weed and all the liquor and all the fun and everything. Just give it to me in one fell swoop. That's exactly what I want. That's not what we're striving for.
If it's saying that it's taking it from us, it's away from the tourist.
To say
that we're going back towards, like, it's like a fresh start. It's taking it away from us so we can
Us. But meanwhile, it's living, you know, it's thinking, it's living with all of the fun and the excitement and the hedonism and the pleasures and all the things that we have now given to it. It's like, yeah, bring it on. I'll take another shot.
Okay, I gotcha.
That's the lifestyle where it wants it. We're moving away from that. We don't want that.
Right, but anyway. God has that go serving that purpose.
Correct.
That's all.
It's just interesting. I know, Monroe, you'll appreciate this. What's the mountain that Esav is given in the future? He's given a portion. The verse says, Mount
Esav.
Close. Mount Seir is what it's called. Do you know what Seir is in Hebrew? Goat. Esav is this goat. Har Seir. Seir is the goat. Whatever. I'm throwing it at you at the last second. It's all connected. It's fascinating. Anyway, this is my thought for Yom Kippur, folks. Be the carpenter who builds the beautiful house. Every day, make good choices. Free will choices. Don't blame anybody. Don't blame your circumstances. This is your call, your choice. And the fact that you're on this call at this time, even though I'm way over time, good choice. Have an easy, meaningful fast. I will see you in quite a few weeks. We're going to take quite a break here. I think, Liz, when do we start up again? 19th. The 19th. We're starting a new series.
Of October.
October, yes, the 19th. For those of you who are in the Frederick area or a little beyond Frederick, don't forget, we also have Simchas Torah at the campus. You guys are more than welcome to come eat a meal in the sukkah. I'll reach out to you. I'll send you all, we'll send you an email and stuff, but come spend a meal with us. Come enjoy. It's a beautiful holiday. Believe and take Floridians.
They need to explain.
All right, but be safe. Arlene, Charles, be safe.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
My pleasure.